Now, I've heard Jim speak at the Cornhusker Roundup about 3 years ago. I've listened to many of his tapes, and I love him. I really do. You know, I think he has one hell of a message that he carries of how he recovered and what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for him. And he carries it and shows that he will do that for anybody if they want it. Jim?
I love Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll just say anything. If it feels good, we just say it. If it feels bad, we live it. Don't look at me like something's going to happen. It's not going to happen. I went to the restroom. Well, I'm glad they didn't have the speakers in there. I was at the place the other night. We had a home meeting, and this lady waited to start the meeting until I got started in the bathroom. And then that's the first time I tried to go and say the serenity prayer at the same time. I can't do it. I just can't do it. I'm double-minded, but I couldn't do that. Thank you very much for inviting me. I know when you call that we're all sick folks. And I understand, and especially you know this as well. I heard him 3 years ago, you know. And you know then we're sick folks. However, if you're not here tonight, you're okay, so don't worry about it. Thank you, and Dick. And Peggy always gets sick and looks better sick than most of us do. He just does that to make you feel bad, that's all. But I do thank the committee, and I love to come here. And don't know it, but y'all are as sweet as Texans. Y'all really are. And I didn't want to tell you that because I was afraid you'd change, you know. But it's okay to be as sweet as Texans. But I am Jim Williams, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really not supposed to be an alcoholic. I'm supposed to be a Southern Baptist. I'm supposed to live by five commandments. Don't drink whiskey, commit adultery, play cards, dance, or smoke cigarettes. And of course, we never did do the others anyway, so we didn't have to take those up at all. Those were the only ones that we had trouble with. And so I was raised on that Baptist bench. We didn't anybody drink at my house. And I didn't think in this little town in West Texas where it was a dry county, that means no booze is sold, and they don't even think about it. There was no reason for me to ever even think that little Jimmy would ever take a drink of whiskey, or a cold beer. And I stayed in that church, and it's kind of a funny deal, you know, they point the finger at you. You know, they say, I'm going to sing one more stanza for that right back there. You don't know why they're doing it. You hold your throat, it hurts. Preacher will say, if you think it, you might as well have done it. My God, I was thinking it, I didn't even know what it was. But I just knew I must be thinking it. And they'd talk about those folks out there. And I thought, God, I wonder why those folks out there keep staying out there. I was afraid if you joined up with them, you never would find out what those folks did out there. And they kept singing that stanza. And then finally got to be about 13, which will happen if you do what I was doing one day at a time. And I got around this girl and got those funny feelings. And I told them about it. They said, we've been meaning to talk to you. Say, I need a head. Says, you know we've been praying for you. See, it's not like AA. AA says, saw Dick lay in the ditch last night. He lives. We'll get him. This bunch, they just look at, see that deal in your eyes. They see that spark down there deep in your eyes. They know you got, and they start praying for you. And they start beating, pointing at you, taking that stanza. There he is. That's the one. We've got to get him in here. Well, I told them about it. They said, meet us before the service. And I met them before the service. And you know what? I'm going to do it. I want to do it because I know if I do it, I'm going to be a good boy. And I want to be a good boy. I haven't been good enough yet because nobody's loved me enough yet. And I'm not fitting in. I know when I do what they tell me to do, I'm going to be there. They're going to love me like I want to be loved, and I'm going to fit in like I want to fit. And then they send that last stanza for that right back there. And I came down the aisle, my throat choking, I was scared to death. But it's kind of like, hey, except don't give out any chips. They hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are. And of course, you know you're not, but hell, I like it. They put you in the tank and the handkerchief leaks. You choke a little, but you come out okay. Went to school the next day and saw that girl, came right back. I went back and told them, we'll have to do it again. Didn't take. They said, no, you just don't do it. Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know they could just say, don't do that. And they didn't do it anymore. I said, how do you don't do it? Don't think about it. I said, God, I wonder why I didn't think about that. Now, I thought, well, it's 2:30. I've been thinking about it all day today. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day. And tomorrow when I get up, I'll never think about it again. Got up the next morning, thought about it more, and I thought about it a lot. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it more than I ever did before. And when I start not to think about it, I'm just going to think about it all the time. I think I even thought about it while I was sleeping. Because just as I waked up, there I was. Well, I finally got to be 17, which will happen to you if you just keep doing what I was doing. And I still never did fit in. My folks would say, Jimmy would never want to do that. Yeah, I did too. They said, Jimmy wants to do that. No, I didn't either. And I already knew there's something wrong with me. I wasn't fitting in. They never did love me enough. Nothing was ever enough. Well, I heard about a town that was 30 miles away. That's a long way, you know. 30 miles away that was wild and wicked. So one Saturday, that's before you did things during the week. We took a bath and everything on Saturday. This guy and I flipped over there, opened the door of that honky-tonk beer joint, and there was that deacon with a warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, my God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us, and we didn't even get to do it. I should have known then, if you get caught before you do it, y'all just give it up. This guy says he can't tell anybody, but I knew he had a better shot with Jesus than I did. However, I thought deacons were just sad. You know, he looked sad every morning. I liked the girl he was with a lot better than the ones he was with on Sunday morning. And besides, he is happier than I'd ever seen him. Now I know what happened to him. The reason he's sad on Sunday morning, hell, he is tired. We had two beers, didn't do anything for me. Didn't smell good, taste good, feel good. Got through those two beers, glad to get out of it. The next morning, I wanted to go to church. First time in life, I thought, maybe you get old enough, you don't have to go. There he was, sad, like he always was. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. So I told my buddy, I said, don't tell a soul. Next Saturday, we're going to go back. It's a big town, had two joints, we're going to the other joint. Went to the other joint, and as far as I know, there's no deacons there. And I learned how to do everything but commit adultery. I'd have done that, except didn't know how in the first place. And the second place, we get so busy. Then if we do, we don't know whether we did or not. And you can't call back and say, we do anything last night? Hell, you might have, and everything is fine. I didn't know it. I was just getting ready to live a life of, I don't know. I learned how to drink. All I had to do is just drink. I just drank one beer right after the other. Wasn't anything to it. I learned it, caught on the second trip. Second try. And I got feeling so good, couldn't feel it all. Learned how to dance. Southern Baptist is not allowed to dance. Learned how to fall down the dance floor, broke my nose right there. Did it four times after that. After I learned how to do it. Blacked out just like I was supposed to. Waked up the next morning, threw up. This guy called, said, how you feel? I said, my God, I feel horrible. He said, oh, but you had a great time. I said, oh, well. Yeah. Then I knew how to have a good time. Just go out, get drunk, black out, pass out, wake up next morning, throw up, then you know you had a good time. I never did know you drank any other way. I never knew that when you went to drink, you didn't go drink. I didn't know people, when they said a scrap of beer, that meant close the joint. I didn't know anybody did any other way. I thought the poor people that drank a drink and a half, left part of it, or messed with it till the last week of it to where nothing happened, or ate a sandwich with a beer, just didn't know how to do it. I was on an airplane the other day. Guy must have been Catholic. You know Catholics drink. If you don't believe it, just ask the Southern Baptists. They know the Catholics drink it. I didn't get to talk to the Catholics knowingly till I got here, you know. And I was on the plane, and we had a sandwich. They gave us a sandwich. And this guy had a sandwich, a cup of coffee, and I had a sandwich and diet drink so I'd lose weight. And then this girl says, "Would you like anything else?" He said, "Yeah, I'd like a scotch and soda." I said, "I'm telling you, waste your time. You're blowing 2.5. The show's over. You've already ruined the whole deal. Nothing's going to happen." And I said, "Well, you know, since I've been in AA, I've been wrong about one or two things. I might just check that out." I watched him. And he brought him a little old Billy bottle. Hell, I didn't even think getting stuff out of his neck was about like that. And I thought, God, you'd have to order those a dozen at a time. And he finally got it in there when it's too late. Anyway, you know, I said, "The plane's going to land before he gets that drink fixed." And then he drank it. You know what happened to him? Nothing. And I knew I was right. Those people are just wasting their money trying to drink that stuff. And I started telling him, "Toss it off. He's Catholic. Just let him live in ignorance the rest of his life." You know that the Catholics and the Baptists are two of the hardest ones to find God. But once y'all get them in there, well, they do pretty good, you know, once you get them. Well, I kept doing that. I always did it a lot when I did it, but I couldn't do it too much. But at first, because you get caught, you know. And then they had a war, and of course I went because they had a finger on the sign and said, "We need you." And I need to be needed. So I went. After I got there, they didn't seem to be too happy I was there. It was a funny bunch. God, they got up in the dark, the middle of the night, with nothing going on. We just got up. And we ate and threw up when you couldn't do anything, you know. You couldn't eat. God, you can't eat in the dark. And they're scared. They walked in groups. And they wouldn't get out by themselves. I know they're scared all night. Somebody's going to get us. I never could figure out who it was, his actress, but I knew we had to walk in groups. And then at night, when things got ready to get started, 9 o'clock, they said, "Turn off the lights, go to bed." And then they decided it'd be good for some of us to go to China. So I wanted to go. I'd never been, you know. And coming from a small town, I thought traveling would be good for me. So I went to China, and God, we went by boat. I'm in the Air Force, so we went by boat. I guess they flew the Navy over there. I'll bet you nobody knows what happened causing that war to stop. Because we didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't even notice anything going on. The place we got over in China, there's a lot of Chinese over there. They've got more Chinese over there than they've got trees. You'd stop out in the middle of the country, wouldn't see a soul. Just look at the trees and mountains. Stay there about 10 minutes, here they come. Coming up. I really think they've got too many. After I'd been over there about 3 weeks, I'd seen it. And I told them I was ready to go home. And they stayed 2 years. And we'd have a big time on Saturday night. They'd say, "The bombers are coming." So we'd go up and get in the hills, those little caves. They'd drop those little bombs. We'd have little firecrackers going off, you know, and that'd be all us there. Except a lot of times it was too cool. You'd run up there in your shorts, get a little cool. Outside that, it's no big deal. It's just something to do on Saturday night. Wasn't nothing to do over there, you know. Well, they finally came back by boat. And then, of course, everybody was going to school. And my folks says, "You're going to school?" I said, "No, hell, I hate school. What are you going to do? Go to work?" "Well, I don't know. Somewhere." Why, you don't know anything to do it. Remember, from now on, if you do not have that piece of paper, you will not be able to get a job anywhere. Everybody is going to have that piece of paper. Everybody that's been to service is going to school. Everybody that's coming out of school is going to school. I said, my God, I failed school. Couldn't get out of school. I had to go to summer school and get to school. Hate school. Went to school. But I proved my folks wrong. I got that piece of paper, but I made sure that I didn't learn anything. You know what I like about you and I? We're the only one that will insist upon destroying ourselves just to be right. A lot of people won't do that. But we will. We'll do it. You know, there's one statement we'll never be guilty of. I may be wrong about that. If we ever say that, it's when we're damn sure we're right. Having some minor difficulties with women. I don't know any. If you put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know where I learned how to do that. I'd see other guys, they just go with any woman. Well, you know you can't do that. You're not supposed to go with a girl unless it's one you can take home, and one that you'd marry, and one that you're in love with. The only awkward part about being the way I am is when you're in love and don't have a girl. Way my deal was is take me about 2 months to find one. And then when I'd finally find her, we'd be so much in love in 2 months, I'd almost have to quit work. Then that just deteriorates from there on out. God, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, my God, this is heaven. The first time in my life that they had the sick women group. You had two kinds. The ones that did it and got sick, and the ones that watched them do it and get sick. And being an open-minded person, I was acceptable to both. Well, of course, I had a very disappointing news when I got out of school. You're supposed to go to work. I had no idea that there was one thing I did not care for. I hadn't noticed it before. You know, I did a part-time job going to school, and I thought it wasn't bad. But this way, every place I worked, they wanted me to come work on Monday. And a lot of times I wasn't well on Monday. Had a lot of flu. We had flu in Texas on Monday. Bad flu. And they never did run it right. They never did treat me right, nor pay me right. And you and I, being the way we are, when we see things wrong, we just can't stand for people to do things wrong. We just know they need to do it right. And I kept explaining to them over and over what they're doing wrong. Took me a long time to notice I was always the one that was leading. Some of the places where I work are still operating, doing it wrong. I think that's the reason most of us shouldn't be in business for ourselves. We're really too smart to be in business. Finally lost a job and couldn't get one. And I'd look for jobs, I'd get up every morning, throw up, and pray. Then I'd go fill out one of those damn forms which ask you many questions they should not ask you. Like, where have you worked the last 10 years? Which is nobody's business. They even want to know where you've lived, and that certainly is none of their business. And then you've got to figure out in those blanks, what do you think they'd like for me to say? And that takes a long time to fill that out. And then, of course, the interview doesn't last long. You don't get the job, you go out and get drunk, do it again the next day. I did that for about 10 days. And then I knew this place where I knew a guy, and I knew that they'd hired him. Because I knew the guy down there, and I knew they had an opening. And I went down there, and that guy was sitting with this other guy, and he said, you don't want this job. I said, yeah. Everybody knew what I didn't want, and everybody knew what I wanted. And it was always the opposite. I said, I need the job. I'm out of the job. I need it bad. I'm broke. I need the money. You don't want this job. I also knew there's something he'd like to tell me about me, but you know how it is. I also knew they were going to be more comfortable when I left. So I just went out and got drunk, waked up the next morning, threw up, prayed, and decided, I think I'll take the day off. Been doing that for almost 10 days. Went out to the golf course, ate an old egg, an old piece of toast, because I thought I might drink later. Walked around that old beer joint near the golf course where my only last friend who understood me was. He said, God, you look horrible this morning. I said, I think I'm coming down with something. He said, the way you're vibrating, I think you need a beer. I said, oh, my God, I couldn't drink now. I said, you know, I'm Baptist. We never drink before noon, which is 10:30, and it's only 9:15. He said, the way you look, I don't think it'd make any difference. I drank half that beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. Get thinking about women or something, and then get to your nose and burn. You have to drink the rest of the day to kill the pain. I knew how to meditate before I got here. I do not meditate that close anymore. It's when it's just me, God, and the commode. And I said, oh, God. And it's stringy. And you don't know where the end is. And you can't bring it back. So you don't know whether you're going or staying. You know, it's so tiring when you meditate that deeply. The reason I don't do it anymore. They ought to use that commode part for the energy deal. Even in the hot summertime, you know, it's so tiring and you're kind of tired that you need to rest a moment. And you just lean over there and that's just as cool. I told that guy, I said, I think I better go home. So I went home. I love to have a meeting with me. You know, I call on hospitals and I'd be driving out towards that hospital. I said, God, I hate to go to that big old hospital. It's hard to find a place to park. And besides that, you got to carry that kit down through the lobby, down through the basement, down there to see that first agent. You know what kind of guy he is. Hell, he ain't going to buy anything anyway. You don't even have to stop. Just drive right on by and go to the beer joint. Said, how was your day? Terrible. Didn't buy nothing again today. So I thought, you know, I think I'll commit suicide. And those guys that didn't hire me will worry about that for the rest of their days. They'll see in their Jimmy Williams commit suicide and they'll never get over it. They'll worry about that till they die. But I didn't know how to do it. Now it's nothing to anything anymore. God, you see it on TV all the time. Suicide. Call this number. You know, I was back before they knew we needed to commit suicide. You know, now I'm sure they got a bunch of ways to do it the painless way and now they've got overdose. Very popular overdose here. The only thing they remember is the pump. And I'm from the old school where you should be sound in mind and body when you commit suicide. I remember all three of mine. I was there, knew what I was doing. I didn't like guns. They're noisy. I don't like noise in the morning. They splatter all over everything. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So when in doubt, just go in the bathroom. Had a lot of meetings in there anyway. Got my razor blade and sat down on the throne. And cut both wrists. I had sense enough to know if you cut the left wrist, the left side will die and the right side will be alive. You know, we're pretty smart about things even though we haven't done it before. So I just cut both wrists and I'm just sitting there listening to the drip. Thinking about those guys, never gonna get over it. And the phone rang. Then I thought, what if where I'm going I'll always wonder who that was called? That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a band-aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. And it's the police. So they're kind of, I think they ministers train them. Come go along with me. Except I never talked to one yet. They didn't have personality change. They need this program badly. They'll never make it, but they need it. When they'd say, come go along with me. I said, I'm sorry, I can't make it. Then they start to get all excited. I said, hell, I'm not going. I've got to go home. Then they go nuts, and you have to pacify them and go along with them. This guy said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here. He said, no, you wasn't. I said, how do you know? We is there. See, now they won't talk to him anymore. I know I learned don't ever talk to anybody knows more about where you've been than you do. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, you either come down here or we'll come out there and get you. I said, I'll be right there. He said, if I were you, I'd pick up an attorney on the way. I said, I'll do that. It'll cost you, but take me about 30 minutes later, but I'll be there. I love to live with me. I can live a week and a half of that. It's just 11 o'clock, and I've had a hell of a day. I've had 3 big meetings, been at the golf course, committed suicide, and now I've got to call an emergency meeting because something's come up. And I thought, you know, I've lived in Houston long enough. And I've got $36 before inflation was finished our new career. I think I'll just leave. So I just got all my dirty clothes, clean clothes, had one piece of furniture and a lamp. I was going to carry the light, I guess, if I could ever find a place to plug it in. And mailed the keys to folks' own joint and left town. Got me a pint of whiskey in case anything happened. Wakes up the next morning with $7 in a town about 170 miles from there. And I said, wonder how my folks are getting along. So I call them. They said, where are you? I said, I'm in Brownwood, Texas. Where are you going? Well, I'm going to Lubbock. I knew that was west of Houston. And I knew my friend was there. I just hadn't met him yet. And they said, well, why don't you come by here and have a cup of coffee? They live in Fort Worth. I said, I believe I'll do that. Haven't seen you in a while. I've been hungry to see you. Went by to see him. I never shortchanged my folks. They're never going to get their money back. So I give them my very finest performance every time. In fact, that story I told them that night was so horrible. I got to listen to it. Hell, I cried with them. And I thought, when I was laying there in bed that night, I thought, my God, if I'd have known that deal was that bad in Houston, I'd have left there 3 years ago. And old John said, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. My God, 107, you can almost go into business. I knew I had to sweat out the night, so I sweat out the night. The next day I got up, and right before I left, I said, oh, by the way, there's one little thing I left out last night. I've been drinking some. Going through all that hell down there, I just want you to know that last night I decided that I'm never going to drink another drop as long as I live. And my folks didn't have any expression whatsoever. Just like I told that post before they covered it. I asked my aunt after I got an A, I went back up there to my year birthday to tell her the great news. And I said, you remember that time? And she said, which one? And she said, well, I think I do, and I think. I turned around to John and said, what do you think? And he said, he's 33. He'll never make it till he's 35. Said, every time you left us, we thought that probably will be the last time. I got in that car and regrouped. I thought, there's no point in going to Lubbock. That guy's probably not there. I think I'll go down to Rio Grande Valley. Never been. Knew a guy went down there 5 years ago. Don't call. He'll tell you not to come. Drove right out of Fort Worth, got out about 10, 12 miles, and they're going to stay on here in Main Waco, too, ain't they? And I said, how far is the Waco? Stopped at a filling station, just happened to sell beer. And he said, 79 miles. I said, let me have 3. The beer's not drinking anyway, you know. And I end up in the Rio Grande Valley. I'm going to tell you something that's different, folks. The Rio Grande Valley is not in Texas, United States. It's in the Rio Grande, or Mexico. It's just there. There's a ranch that's 55 miles with nothing in between. And I started driving down. I thought I was never going to get there. I thought I was going to run out of ground before I got there. And I saw that sign. I flipped back that big door. I said, what does that mean? I said, that's a ranch. There's nothing in between. I said, let me have 6 tall boys. I got there. It took me about 3 weeks sitting around. And I never took my stuff out of the car. I'd go down and get a pair of short socks, shirt, go up, change clothes, beautiful downtown hotel I was staying in, came back, go out and stayed at this place trying to get a job. Now, they'll hire you there. because nobody goes through down there. A lot of people come up here from the Midwest and go down there in the wintertime, but they just go down there to live. You see, they change countries down there. They got a little creek, and they go in another country, new language and everything. Beautiful place to get drunk and die, but not outside of that. So they hide me. They'll hide you if you're just breathing halfway. And for some reason, I could always work 7 days a week and kind of just get drunk, not drunk, drunk, and get up to where I knew, get my place. Sometimes I had to tell them about a guy that maybe needed not to be there. They had a guy in the wrong place. I'd have to explain it to him, show him the way, you know, and then get his place. Then I got into my place. I'm laying over there taking a little nap about 15 minutes after I got off work because I knew I was going to go get drunk. You've got to get rested to go do that sometimes. And the manager came by and said, would you like to go get a beer? I said, oh, I guess so. He was a drunk, just like me. I lasted there 8 years. In fact, I'd have still been there, died there, I guess, if he hadn't lost his job. He was covering for me. Of course, it didn't take long to get rid of me after that. And I'm trying to get married. My God, I've been trying to get married since I'm 17. Been in love, you know, since I was 13. So, I was trying to go with two women. One was not working out. And you get that awkward spot. So then, finally, I'm trying it with two. And courting's hard. You know, you call them about 3:30, 4 o'clock, said, I'll see you about 7:30. Might be 4 or 5 days before you get by them. But I finally got me one that was a little different. You know, there's nothing that's more romantic and sweet and precious living than just stand up with a man and woman cussing each other out, you know, telling each other what you are. But don't hurt yourselves. This girl took advantage of me a couple of times while my equilibrium wasn't right. And usually, my weekends are pretty well planned. I used to go to work early in the morning, and I got off early. So I was always drunk early and in bed 8 or 9 o'clock. So on Saturdays, that's a different deal. I get off 12, 15, run out and get drunk, come home, take a nap, get up 10 o'clock, go out and get drunk. Guess that, a matinee and a late evening deal. And then Sunday, you just get drunk trying to stop Monday. And I did that every weekend, but this particular time, I was going to work on Saturday, and I'm up at 11 o'clock. I'm not supposed to be up at 11 o'clock on Friday night. The whole thing's out of... And I'm over at her house, and I just, being honest, like I've always been, I've made a little comment that I might drop by on the way home and see this other girl. But I wanted to go to her bathroom first. For some reason, honesty, a lot of people can't take real honesty. This didn't go over well with her for some reason. And she followed me in the bathroom, and we had a meeting there. That's the wrong place to have a meeting. Don't ever have a meeting. There's nothing soft in there, you know. And I don't know what happened because I don't remember being there, but I just kind of remember going in there, and I kind of remember her coming in and mentioning some nice word, and then I don't know what happened after that. Next morning, I'm just laying there like I'm supposed to be and living in a beautiful place, an old, 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 faded green trailer that's in an alley behind a motel. I had a rock yard a long time before these people started putting them in. I'd see those weeds come up there, you know, I said, you'll never make it. You'll never make it. I'd already learned how to wake up in total fright in my own bed. I never knew how I got home. If it was in my home, I never knew how I got home. And about that time, I'm laying there asleep like I was supposed to be. Poof! Something hit that door, and I jumped up and looked down. My God, had my clothes on. I said, I bet you I was going somewhere early this morning. Opened that door, and there was that 6'4", 240-pound Baptist preacher saying, come go along with me. I said, preacher, I can't make it. I know I look like I'm ready, but I'm really not ready. I hadn't been up that long. And I looked down there on an old white shirt and had a piece of blood on it, and blood makes me sick, you know. Didn't know whose it was, and my head felt like I'd been hit with a hammer, been in a car wreck or something. Looked out there, my car looked okay. Parked funny, but looked okay. And he said, get in the car. I said, preacher, I can't make it. My God, I can't make it. I can't make it. You just don't realize what I'm in right now. And he said, get in the car. And I got in the car. I said, preacher, I'm going to have beer. Doesn't make any difference what you say. I'm going to have beer. I'm going to have it right now. He said, there'll be no drinking before the meeting. Now, I knew I was supposed to go to the meeting. And we drove up in front of her house. So I assumed the meeting was going to be at her house. And I went in there. My head kept throbbing. You know, hangovers are nothing. But this thing kept like somebody had hit me in the head. Had a couple of knots there. But I, you know, knots don't feel just knotty, you know. We opened the door, and there she was, and she didn't look like she might have fallen in a bush or something, you know. And I said, well, I've got to go to the bathroom. And I went there and looked in that mirror, and I'm going to tell you something she won. I never could find out for sure what happened, but I think I know. I think I must have lost my equilibrium, and I fell in that bathtub, and she stepped on me. Two weeks later, we got married. We got married in the First Baptist Church, so it worked. And the preacher said there'd be no drinking before the funeral, the marriage. So it screwed up. It was on Saturday, and I was off again. I was up at 11 o'clock again, and I said, there's no use of us getting married, having anybody, because, you know, you've been married before, and I haven't, you know. And, of course, I started calling people at 11, quit 3 a.m. Called a lot of people. Really enjoyed getting called between 1 and 3. They commented on it when we got to the funeral house parlor, church house. My beer distributor friend said, you call me at 10 minutes to 3. You know better than that. And said, I'm going to tell you something. We didn't come down here to see y'all get married. We came down here because we could not believe it. And he said, I don't want to disappoint you or anything, but the longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. But we showed them. We hung it in there for 8 years. But my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag that morning. So I'd grab those cigarettes, that coffee, and go in that bathroom, lock that door, and she'd tell me what I was. I'd have to get upset, go out and make the living, run out and get drunk, then come home and tell her what she was, and we did that one day at a time. Only good day we ever had when we was both just too tired. I went back to that preacher and I said, preacher, this thing's not working. We're having hell. He says, you know what's wrong with you? Y'all are missing the beauty of life. I said, yeah. He said, do you realize the fruit trees are in bloom? I said, no. He said, yeah, why don't you go get your wife and you all drive around and look at the blossoms? I said, yeah. I ran and got in the car and went home. I said, get in the car. He said, what for? I said, we're going to go look at the blossom. She says, the blossom? I said, yeah, we're missing the whole damn thing. She got in the car, and I stopped by and got a six-pack. Drove up the valley, saw a sign that said 14 miles to Battle Marsh, turned left, went to Battle Marsh, switched the tequila, blacked out, and missed the whole damn thing. Lost that job. Couldn't get one. 2 months. Went totally, absolutely insane for 2 months. Every day. Looking for a job. Go as far as Missouri. When I lose a job, I'm always going to change profession. And I'll go into something I've never had any experience in or know nothing about. And that way, you never, hardly ever get a job. I went as far as Springfield, Missouri, to going to manage a country club now. Wouldn't I have been good at that? And then a guy who managed a drug company hired me. And he was a drunk, whom I drank with, and he was a drunk just like me. Well, it took him about 6 weeks to find out one drunk in that drug company in the valley was enough. And he shipped me to Fort Stockton, Texas. Now, you need to go to Fort Stockton sometime to appreciate where you are. 536 people live there. 36 of them are making a living. I joined the 500. Got a lot of little trees out there about that high. You can see California on a clear day. And I was supposed to hold a pad like this and write. Well, nothing worked. My arm would go up, this going down, never could get them going right. And I'm standing there in that drugstore, and this pharmacist says, "You look like you're going to fly apart." I said, "Any minute." And he said, "Well, take some of these." This was before Valium. I understand Valium, you take that and both eyes cross and walk straight. This was just Librium, which is absolutely nothing. So I took two of them, waited 15 or 20 seconds. You know what happened? Nothing happened. So I took three more. Then my knees just said, "Puff." I said, "Hell, I've got to learn a new stance." I knew how to weave. I used to go weave. Very seldom. One night I was coming home and I was weaving and I was kind of, you know, I really like to weave. I'd rather weave than walk right. And one night I came down and Jess was going over in that bush. I knew I'd go. I could have stopped, but I thought, "Hell, I ain't doing it anymore." And I was so glad I did it, because sure enough, next day, then you old, what's the name, would scratch my face. See, and hell, I didn't. Just fell in that damn bush. I'll not tell you this. I'm just, it doesn't have anything to do. I won't put this on tape, but this, because I don't want any doctors or anybody to know about it. It was 50 or 60 miles between every call out there. So you'd think you was okay when you left town. And then there's nothing out there but a few cows hanging on the fence. And some, you know, sagebrush or tumbleweed, what they call them. And against the fence, and it's pretty dry out there. And then that total fear set in, and you couldn't take those tablets. Now, I remember one time somebody told me, if you ever get nervous and your mouth gets dry, bite the tip of your tongue. Come down on the tip of your tongue, the lava comes, you swallow those tablets. No charge for that. Don't put that on there. In case you go back, you might be out in West Texas, wake up out there with no water and some Valium or something, and you need it, you know, quart. A bottle, take a bottle of it. Hell, ain't no use messing with it. I like us, we don't mess with nothing. How much is in the bottle? I don't know. How much you take? Whatever was in the bottle. What bottle? Just whatever bottle it is. You know, it's amazing. I just drink anything today. I don't care. Is it some kind of punch? What does it taste like? Well, I don't know. What difference does it make? I can drink it. God, I never drink anything because it tastes good anyway. I just drank stuff because it did good. Lost that job. Some guy out of Indiana had recommended me for a job, and they flew me up there, and I didn't know who they were or what they were, and they were 42 years old. And I knew you couldn't ask. My God, you ought to know who they are. Didn't know what they did. And they sat around and looked at you, and I looked at them, and they looked at me. And the president of the company said, "We don't know why you're here." Well, I couldn't answer that. I didn't know why I was there either. So finally, the guy, vice president, head of sales, it was 2:30 in the afternoon. That's a long time past 10:30. Now, I'm not moving on the outside, but I'm moving on the inside. I want you to know my insides move. They don't mess around. And I said, "I don't know what the holdup is here, but I know one thing. Whatever it is y'all are questioning, I can do it." He said, "We don't think you can do it." I said, "I can do it." I didn't know what it was, but I knew I could do it. They made it what it was. I need to do it right then. I never did it anymore. He said, "Well, I'm going to go ahead and hire you, but we think we're making a mistake." And I said, "Well, you're not making a mistake." So it was back in Houston. I'll go back to Houston. That was March the 1st of 1965. And I go back and I last 9 months. None of these customers saw me drunk. I would always, if I did have a drink or two with them accidentally at the golf course or something, I'd slip off and go to my place and get drunk and black out and go home. I went home one way only, and that's blacked out. I don't think you should go home any other way. And that way you don't know what happened. And then when she tells you, you don't have to believe it, because you don't know and don't believe it. You know, she wouldn't tell you the truth anyway. And the day before Christmas Eve of 1965, I played golf with the people, and had some people there from Oklahoma and Kansas, to relatives, and two foursomes, and I tried to be hospitable, and I was a little too hospitable. And we had beer, and I forgot to eat the sandwich. I had the beer, but I forgot to eat the sandwich. And I blacked out, which is nothing new for me. Drove from one side of Houston to the other. Waked up the next morning, threw up just like I was supposed to. Waked up in total fright. Looked out there, and there's my car, and it's back. Don't know how it got back, and it never says. Picked up the phone, called them, just like I always did. Always after the party, I'd always, if they let me go, I'd call and say, Sure am sorry about last night. Wasn't sorry about last night. I wanted them to tell me what I did. And the only thing they would always say was, it was okay, Jim. You just got drunk. God, I was getting drunk. Was getting to be a bad word with me. God, if they said alcoholic, I could handle that. But drunk was getting to be bad. I'm not an alcoholic. Oh, what's the name? And gone next door, getting ready to have a party at Christmas Eve. And I guess heard on radio. I picked up the phone book, looked under Alcoholics Anonymous, and called in a group. And this girl acted like she was glad I called, which I should have known then I had the wrong number. She said, somebody be right out. Well, I waited an hour, 10, 15, looked at the icebox, had three beers. I said, I'll just call them back, tell them I don't need him. About that time, the phone rang, he said, be right there before I can tell him, didn't need him, hell, he hung up. The guy came by himself because he'd been living, he and his wife had managed these apartments and had just left 2 months before that. And he said, I used to watch you go back and forth to 7-Eleven saying, if he lives, we'll get him. I thought, I'll just get rid of him. I looked out the door and here he comes. Short, deacon, looked like a deacon, sad. Had a book on his arm. I said, oh, hell. We're going to pray and read that book. I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. I thought, I'll just get rid of him. He walked in that door, we didn't read that book, and we didn't pray. I don't even know what he said. About that time, old what's-her-name came back in. He said, you want to go with me? Well, I didn't, but it's better than staying with her. So I got in the car with him, and he hit the old 610 loop, and he said, I've made a mistake. I've gone off with a perfect stranger. He's not my kind of guy. I know better not to take my car, damn it. And I said, I'll buy a beer. I don't want a beer. God, I knew it. I waited about 15 seconds. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I got bad drunk last night. And I'm going to tell you, either let me off here and I'll walk off this freeway. I've got to go with that. You told him, well, you take me over there. I've got to have a beer. I've got to have it right now. Besides, that's 11:15. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. I can handle total fright if I got a little light. It's when there's no lights. I can't handle that fright. And we drove and drove over kind of a bad neighborhood. Drove up front of this old house. I said, this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Went in, some of the deacons were sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on didn't know anything about either one. And the old bar back there in the back with an old piece of linoleum over it had holes in it. And the bartender didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. This is a program of attraction, you know. This guy says, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God. What do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. He said, and you're used to sugar from your system from alcohol. And the honey's already been digested. I said, indigestion's not my problem. You know, if you throw up right, you don't have indigestion. Well, I started drinking and it curdled, came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. I thought, hell, I guess I'm just going to put on a show here for these guys. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. You know how they do you. Got that milk and honey. Walk up and down, and they said, got a new animal in here today. And watch you walk up, they just tell jokes, laugh at you. God, and as long as the day went, that sweet, 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 sick, sick, sweet, sweet, sick, sweet. I could almost taste it. Sick, sweet, sick. Hell, I hadn't had a piece of chocolate pie in 15 years. Finally, about 5 o'clock, I said, I guess we better go. I said, yeah. Got in the car, I thought, let me out 2 blocks before the apartment. I was going to slip in there and get my car. I knew you'd have to go get some bourbon. Beer would not cut that sweet taste out of it. He said, don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour. I said, what for? We're going to a meeting. I said, where? Right back where we came from. Said, my God, we're there all day. I said, well, just let me out the apartment. And I waited. Here he coming. Back over there we go. Kind of a funny bunch. I saw four or five of them kind of hugging and kissing, kind of laughing a little. The rest of them looked about as sad as I did. They looked like they're too happy to be there. And they started out a little funny prayer. And then some girl got up talking about 30, 40 minutes. Hell, they just laughed. She didn't say nothing funny. Guy got up and talked a while. He just laughed. It was a damn thing funny. I said, hell, these people are crazy. Then they got up and held hands and said, the Lord's Prayer, my God, the Holy Spirit moved in that place. They all started talking at the same time. Not a one of them blessed. I said, how the hell did they do that? God, it just exploded. They didn't sing any songs, go down, kneel down there, didn't do nothing. Boom, there you go. Hell, it's all alive, glad this there, and everything is fine. Then about 30 minutes later, I'm standing over there with this deacon. Nobody's speaking to us. He's sad, he's not grinning and laughing. I'm not grinning and laughing, but everybody else having a good time. Then I saw men and women getting together, taking off and jumping in those cars, two or three cars at a time, take it off. Then I knew the deal. As soon as you get in there for a while, you start having a little drink, go off and you talk about this thing. We kept going and going. Nobody invited us. I said, I've got the only one. I've got the only one. One night it just raining, raining, raining. My God, it rains in Houston, different rains anywhere else. Just falls out, Houston. This guy said, pick you up about 30 minutes. I said, hell, it's raining. He said, Jeff, go get a drink. What's raining? I said, I'll be ready. Then one night, oh, what's her name, was out of town, and I just pulled out all the shades, turned out all the lights, had nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, 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 let it ring. Next morning, he called and said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here watching television, had a fantastic time, may do it again tonight. He said, well, you missed it. I said, what did I miss? He said, I don't know. I said, wasn't you there? He said, yeah. But I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you're supposed to hear. I thought, my God, you've got to go every night. You'll miss it. Well, I went every night for three months got drunk. Then I sobered up on my own, all by myself. Because I'd heard it takes 72 hours for alcohol to get out of your system, so I waited about 60 and that was enough. Then I was going to go back to the meeting and officially resign. And tell them I did not need them anymore, that I have figured out what's wrong. The only thing that's really wrong with me is I've always been underfinanced. And if I can just get financed, I can work everything else out. Like leave. Before I got to tell him, the meeting started, and at the meeting, here he comes. And boy, I was ready for him. He walked up to me, and before I could tell him, he said, don't you ever call me again. I looked at that little man. I said, I'm going to tell you something. I didn't call you in the first place. They called you. And I'm going to tell you something that nobody else will tell you. Nobody here likes you. We don't get invited anywhere. And they don't know me, so it's got to be you. And if I had as bad a personality as you did, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't ever have to worry about me calling you again. I'll never call you again as long as I live. And I didn't until the next morning. I called him the next morning. He said, meet me at the club. I met him at the club and walked door. He said, get your coffee and sit down. They talk to you like a dog here, you know. He said, I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous. Al-Anon, Al-Teen, Al-Top, and Al-Dog. There's absolutely no failure here. This program does not, will not, cannot, must not, impossible to fail. It just cannot fail. Provided you do exactly what we tell you to do the way we tell you to do it. So now, there's only one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your day. But that's all you're going to get to do. But you're the only one who's going to get to do it. From now on, you're going to make a decision. And you're the one who's going to make the decision. And we're going to give you that decision right now to make. Because if you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. Now we're going to decide, we're going to let you decide whether you're going to go our way of life or your way of life. Now you can tell me which one you're going to do. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you wanted to do, I asked you what you're going to do. I said, do you mean to tell me that you don't care whether I want to or not? He said, not a bit. I said, the group doesn't care? And he said, not at all. I said, well, you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I do not want to do it, then I'll do it. He said, well, we got to get some things straight first. First of all, it's your thinking that's wrong. I said, how much of my thinking's wrong? We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, you put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, think, think. And he said, that's for us. He said, now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. Now the things we're going to give you not to do is going to change. The things we're going to give you to do, you'll just add to. Then it's going to happen over there. I said, what's going to happen over there? We don't know, but it always happens. I said, I don't understand anything you're telling me. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. I said, you didn't hear me, and you'll never listen to me since I've been here. I said, I do not understand. He said, and that's it. And whatever you do, there's two things you're going to remember every day for the rest of your life. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. Then when you quit trying to understand, you'll enjoy it. And the other thing is, no matter what your situation is, it's never the situation, it's never them, it's never God, it's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now I'm going to give you the kicker. This is the one thing that got you here. But it's also the one thing that if it does not change, it'll keep you from getting everything that's here for you that God has for his people. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and begin to know you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. He said, I know. Said, now since you do not know how to not do something, we have to let you know how to not do something. So you know that card I gave you that has my number and four other men, no women on my card, and the group number? I said, yeah. When you get squirrely, definitely before you take a drink or a pill, you call one of those numbers no matter when it is. Now, if you don't call, even if you don't drink, you didn't do it. Now, that's the way we're going to learn how to not do something. Now, this is the way we're going to do every day. When you get up in the morning, once you get down on your knees and say these words and these words only, God, take me today. Let me be what you want me to be. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me to death not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what he has not done. Nor what he needs to do. God can handle that all by himself. And then call me before you go to the bathroom. I said, why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean to tell me that you don't think I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. I got up the next morning before I got down on my knees. I said, God, you and I know he don't know. Hell, he's a Presbyterian. We've been praying to you all our life. But we're going to do it just exactly like they say, so when we get through, we can tell him to shove it. I got down on my knees and I said that prayer, and I got up and made sure I need to go to the bathroom. Picked up that phone, called him. He said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. He didn't ask where I need to go now. I met him at the club. He said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, you don't hear me. I said, I hate my job. He said, that has absolutely nothing to do with going to work. I said, well, I couldn't go yesterday. Hey, it's so bad I couldn't go. He said, what'd you do? I said, I stayed home. He said, sit in that chair, thinking. I said, well, till noon, then I went to the club. He said, you don't know how to go to work. I said, how do you do it? Go get in the car. Oh. You write this down, you catch it. Then he said, and besides that prayer that you say every morning, that you're going to say every morning from now on, and we'll just add to it as we need to, always, when you get in the car to go to work, always invite God in today. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you in today. Oh. So you write that down, you can get it in about 3 weeks. Then I met him back at the club, and you know how they are. Sit down, sonny, but don't say anything. You can sit with us. Just listen. The great wisdom is coming out of there, and you can't hear a damn thing, but say, everything is coming out. I don't know what it was. I never heard it. And he said, that's to me. And I said, now I'll go home and thank God for the day. I said, I did not thank God for the day. It's been a miserable damn day. I hate you, and I hate God, and I hate work, and I hate her, and I hate everybody. He said, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. Said, always remember that what you're thinking about has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on. I said, you mean to tell me that I could have thought something different all day long would have had nothing to do? He said, absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the action that you're taking that's going to make you different that you don't even know you're taking. And you can never take action for what you want to happen to happen. You'll always take the action. Something else will happen before what's going to happen is going to happen. Well, I understood that, so I didn't ask you about it. I said, I'm not going to go home and pray to God when, by God, I don't mean it. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like you're not sincere? And I said, yes. He said, God is not depending on you for his relationship with you at all. He's highly capable of taking care of that all by himself. The only thing you're going to be doing is what we tell you not to do and to do, and God's going to take care of all the rest of it. I said, you mean tell me you don't care whether I mean it when I pray to God or not? He said, not at all. The group doesn't care? Not a bit. Huh. Got in my car, went home, locked the door so Watson couldn't get in there. Got down on my knees, said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Hell, if he don't care, they don't care, God don't care, hell, I don't care. Did that for about 2 months. And I was driving down that old loop in Houston about 9:15 one morning. And this God that I had never known is my friend. Moved in that car with me. God, that was the finest feeling I'd ever had. And for the first time I knew something different than I had ever known it before. I knew I would never need to take another drink of anything alcoholic or mind-changing drug as long as I lived, unless I myself insisted upon it. And I knew it. And God, he stayed with me all day long. God, about 3 o'clock last noon, I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I want to get a tent and some tambourines. We're going to go save some souls. I thought I had arrived, and every day is going to be just like this one. I couldn't wait for him to get back to the club. He's 15 minutes late, and he walked through that door and said, get your coffee and sit down. The Baptist is taking over. They don't like it coming back. But he did it, and he sat down. I told him about it. He said, kind of grinned a little, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are thicker than others. I don't even know where I am. Oh, what time is it? You want to quit?
10 minutes.
Y'all got to go to the bathroom? I went right for it. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? He said, you know, my wife and I, we ain't doing nothing about our marriage. We're just going to leave it like it is. And he said, you know, most people that are still married in Alcoholics Anonymous when they get here, married right. Some are not. Some shouldn't be married. And he said, we don't, you know, I'm going to send you to a guy that's got it all worked out. So he sent me to a guy, and guess what he was? Episcopalian. You know, they're just ones that got tired being Catholic. You can tell I knew a lot about theology before I got here. This guy said, what do you want? I said, I'm going to tell you something. I have not been sleeping with old what's-her-name, and I told my sponsor about it. He said, thanks. That's a hell of an answer, you know. And I said, I have always had one or two girls picked out, and I'd lose them every once in a while. You know, I had a lot of compassion for the new girl. I always made sure that new girl was in my group that went to ice cream and sat by me. And she'd say, you know, I just don't feel comfortable talking to a woman, but I feel comfortable talking to you. And I'd say, I'll help you, baby. But they wouldn't let me do it. Y'all probably don't have any trouble like that up here. We have a little trouble down in our group. This guy says, what do you want? I said, well, they've had me on hold for about 2 years and I've got brain damage. Couldn't drink, get any relief, you know. And he said, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. So you know when you got to Alcoholics Anonymous? And you didn't sit in here, and you didn't sit back out there? I said, yeah. And you felt like you were the only man, the only person going through it? I said, yeah. And it was, you weren't alone, but you were lonesome? I said, yeah. He said, if you're willing to make that lonesome walk through every area of your life, I'll not only guarantee you a relationship with one woman, I'll guarantee you a relationship with your fellow man that you can never believe. And I'll give you a bonus on top of that. I'll guarantee you a relationship with God that you could never have imagined. I said, I don't believe that. He said, isn't that fantastic? I said, what do you mean? You don't need to. I said, you mean tell me that I'll have to believe? He said, not at all. I said, I'm going to tell you one damn thing. I've been on this deal for 2 years, and I know I'm getting brain damage. And said, if this does not work, I'm going back to doing things my way. And he said, well, you're the one that's got to change, because you're the one that doesn't know how to live with a woman. Whether she knows how to live with you has absolutely nothing to do with it. Are you still married? I said, yeah, she's there. We have a two-holer. We just meet in the middle once in a while. We do not sleep together. I said, I've been praying for somebody to sleep with her. Nobody will. He said, well, first of all, you've got to learn, and you might as well practice on her because she's there. She's handy. You'd have to go get it over just like her so you could practice. So just practice right where you are. You're never going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, who's going to tell her? He said, I don't know, but you're not. And you'll never tell her. And that'll either be with her or somebody else, and it won't be any different. And you're never going to work her around with friends, Al-Anon, children, or anything to get her to do anything. Or tell her what she needs to do. Ever? Never. And you're going to pray for her. I said, I'm not. He said, yes, you are, and you're going to say this prayer, and you may have to say it many, many times a day in the beginning. God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship, let it become what you want it to be, and show me the truth. I said, I do not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me. He said, remember, what you want has absolutely nothing to do with it. Well, I started doing that. If you can't, go tell them what you're doing. And I had a hell of a time with it. I didn't know I had a bad case. I just had to run out of the house. I couldn't even say good morning. And I'd just go to the club, go on to work. And I did that for about 2 months, 3 months. Then that old thing surfaced, that old sex lust deal that was wrong with me. Surfaced. And God, you know how we're all in pain. I told the sponsor every 11 days, sometimes two or three times. Still had it. And then one, then I finally told the group. And one of the girls said, you're not supposed to say that group. So I went on and told another group. One of them snitched on me. You know, we don't gossip here, we're just concerned. And my sponsor says, you know, usually when you stop doing something, God removes that. But that's not happening to you. So no, what's the name's out of town? You go home and get in that apartment, lock yourself up in there. We're so sick and tired of hearing about old what's-her-name and your thing. We want you to go home, lock that door, and don't you call anybody or come out of there because you and God get rid of it. Well, I didn't want to work anyway, so I just take the day off. So I went home, I started praying and crying and hitting the couch. I learned to quit hitting the bar, it hurt your hand, you know. And about 11 or 12 o'clock that night, I went to sleep. Next morning, it was not there. First time that I could remember, I was free of that thing. Then I knew I knew. I was capable of having a relationship with one person, and I knew it. Oh, what's her name came back in town? And you know what we had after she came back with my sickness gone? Nothing. I went back to four meetings. I thought, I'm not going to tell them. They're so damn smart. At the fourth meeting, I thought, well, I'll tell them. He said, oh, we knew it first night. I said, why in the hell did you tell me? He said, you need to know that you're going to always be the last to know. I said, why is that? He said, we don't know. Evidently, you got to be last before you can be first. So you'll remember, no matter what it is, we'll know before you know. And then, oh, what's her name? She didn't know what to do with me then. And they took her to Al-Anon. They wouldn't let me take her or tell her to go. And Al-Anon, I want you to put this down on record and on tape. I love you dearly. I shall always love you. If there's anything I could ever do, call me. She went to your meeting and found you depressing. She went through three of them. Keep doing what you're doing. It's working every time. She was more depressed each time. Then my sponsor took us to an open meeting, all four of us. And we have a lady in Houston at that time that ran she was from a carnival. She ran a halfway house, Connie Mary. She came in with six ripe girls. Been sober anywhere from 2 hours to 15 minutes. Had picked four of them up from jail. She came in dressed properly for Saturday evening. She had on her plaid shirt, blue jeans, plaid socks, and tennis shoes. Came up and threw her arms around me. Hi, Jim, and kissed me and introduced me to the girl. Oh, what's her name? Got out and says, why don't you just stay on beer and get away from those folks? What I was so grateful for is all of her personality just came out all one time. I saw all of them about 5 minutes, 15 minutes, just boop, boop, boop. And it didn't bother me at all. And we used the same lawyer to get a divorce. She just had to explain to him what kind of guy I was, so he'd know. And get ready for this, though, folks. Once the truth's known, action has got to be taken. 2 months later, I saw her best friend. She said, have you seen old what's her name? I said, no. Happier and prettier than I have ever seen her. I had to call my sponsor to keep from calling her and tell her what she was. I knew she had forgotten. Well, I ran in. I was called on this girl in the hospital, and they would not let me do anything but go to AA and work. Think all I want to, but no action. And they said, if you're ever around anybody, make sure that you start to establish, if it's getting a little bit friendly, that you are working towards a life that God's going to be ahead of every part of your life. So we talked about God and work. And then I took she and 4 other women to a hospital convention, and they accused us of going together. And sure enough, we had some different funny feelings. So after it was over, I said, God, I've got to go see her and face tell her the truth. Nothing I can do about it. So I went, I didn't know whether she was married or what. Never talked about it. I said, I've got to see you in your office. We never went anywhere up the cafeteria, so went upstairs. And I said, well, I'm falling in love with you, but there's nothing I can do about it. My sponsor won't let me have an affair. Then I knew I said the wrong thing. I said, well, I might work out the rest of it. And she's a Southern Baptist, you know. And I said, you might as well know, I'm an alcoholic. I go to AA every single night, twice on Saturday and Sunday. They let me do 2 things. Whoop, go to AA. And that's all I get to do. Think all I want to, but I can't do nothing. She said, well, what's it all about? Well, I don't know. They smoke and bitch because their eyes burn. And they cry and they laugh. And they pray a lot, cuss. And they drink coffee and can't understand why they can't sleep at night. I said, I have to call my sponsor. I called him, he said, what have you been doing? I said, I ain't done nothing. He said, bring her over here. I said, you'll have to go see my sponsor. She looks funny, but she goes. We get over there. We come out of his bookstore and go into the one to meal. And he, same old deal. Sit over there, sonny. I'll handle this. Talk to her for an hour and a half. I thought, hell, I believe he's going with her. And finally he says, well, God might be going to do something for you here. Oh, I've been waiting for that green light. I know how to get him started. Just sign old Earl's name at the motel and get him going. I know how to do that. He said, no, remember our deal? We made the agreement. Without God, AA, and Al-Anon in that home, no home. She doesn't know. She had a bad marriage, but no alcohol was involved. She does not know whether she wants to go this way of life or not. She's got to go find out first. I said, what do you want me to do? Nothing. Just. I had to tell her to go to Al-Anon. Just go in there and tell them your name is Eloise. Don't tell them another damn thing. They need to know something else. She went, took several times, 3 times, and they took them 3 times to tell her why not to go. Why not to go with an alcoholic. That's all she told them. I'm going to an alcoholic. Took 3 meetings. Tell them, don't go with him. I understand it. So I took her to an open meeting. She heard the woman alcoholic talk. She heard the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she came back to that group and said, you got a program here, and I want it. We converted that Southern Baptist. And we now have that relationship that only God gives each man and each woman in Alcoholics Anonymous if they want to go through the pain and the strain to get it. We're totally free in our home, and God, A.A. and Al-Anon does live there. She has 3 children. They were grown. The oldest was a Southern Baptist minister. It took about 3 years for him to come to see us. When he came, he had a little daughter. And over the years, Eloise put us all on our own. And now they come to see us and don't go see their own dad. The middle guy's probably going to be one of us. He's living with a mattress. And he's gotten a divorce. And he loves his mother, and that's all he wants to know is she happy. And the daughter had a bad relationship. Beautiful, 5'8" blonde, blue-eyed. Personality was terrible. Hooks it up with a, actually lost her boyfriend with an old, long-bearded, dirty-bearded, long-haired, dirty-haired, pot-smoking boy. Finally, Eloise and Alan handled that. I don't know how they did it without me, but did. They put them out by themselves and on their own. They cleaned up, went to college, got two girls now, 1'5", 1'2". And they call me Papa Jim and do not know the difference. And they come and spend Christmas with us and Thanksgiving with us. And we spend a little time and vacations together. And that older daughter, she and I corn dog it together. She's saving her money now, so next time she can buy the corn dog. You know, I'm glad I know some things about you and I. One thing is, if you and I are right on time, we're not late up to this moment. And I know that God chose you and I to be his special people. And I know that. I don't know when he chose us, probably by the time we were born. Because he took care of us up through this minute. And I know that my life and your life was never going to be any different until you and I got together. Didn't make any difference what church you went to. If you went to 100, you didn't go to any. Didn't make any difference where you turned left or right. Your life and my life was never going to be any different until you and I got together. And how did we get together? God himself sent us to get together. You didn't know if you were out there getting ready to be what God wanted you to be. You were never going to be until God put you and I together. And I know that. And I know the only thing you and I don't know is that God really did choose us, and we are his special children, and he really does love us. But see, once we did our work and prepared ourselves to go on a program designed only by him and live a life of totally on faith, and the only way we could do that was to be sent to be with each other. And the difference was that now we've got the power that God gives his children, so he can redo us, remake us into exactly what he had for us to be in the first place. Our purpose in life today, whether we know it or don't know it, doesn't make any difference. It's to fulfill what God has for you and I to do. And we're in that place today. And we've got that power just like it is right here, right now. And you didn't know what you were looking for when you were coming here, did you? You didn't know I've got to get drunk one more time, so I'm getting there, getting out now. So it's none of your business where you're going after you get here. My past's going to be different than yours, and your past's going to be different than mine, but you and I now have the way to go down that path, and it's unlimited, because God's got us in the palm of his hand, and we're in that place today, just like it is right now. We've got that power, and you can see it in this room right now. You loving me, and me loving you. Thank you very much.